This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
It's time for The Drive's Top 5 at 5.
What time on your Thursday, 5 o'clock here on Fan Run Radio, coming to you live this afternoon from Jets Pizza in Farragut. Oh, having a great time out here, folks. Come on out and join us as you get off work. $2.50 pints until 7. You got two more hours. We're watching the golf. The U.S. Open is underway. This is the place to be right now. Jets Pizza in Farragut, right next to the Shrimp Dock on Kingston Pike out west. Rick Butler with the top five at five. Rick?
All right, here we go. Number one. Hey, if you like the Big Orange Watch Party, get ready for another one. As Tennessee fans have been invited into Lindsey Nelson Stadium to watch the College World Series at a watch party with all of the Tennessee community, again, at Lindsey Nelson Stadium on Father's Day. This is pretty cool. So the stadium's front gates will open at 1 o'clock p.m. First pitch will be at 2 o'clock p.m. The game will be shown on the big Jumbotron, the video board. And again, admission will be free. Take the family in case you had a great time last weekend. Got another chance.
And don't forget, voluntary reaction. As soon as the game is over, we will be live on the Fan Run app. Have to download it to listen as we go app only, commercial free. Unfiltered, raw reaction to Tennessee-Virginia baseball Sunday evening.
And not to mention, the app itself is free, so you got nothing to lose by going to download it. All right, number two, gentlemen, according to John Wilkerson, it looks like Tennessee baseball has undergone their first practice in Omaha. He tweeted out a picture at about 11 o'clock a.m. today of the Tennessee baseball team warming up on the field as they get ready for their game coming up this weekend. But just in the recent couple of hours or so, we actually got some more awards coming down for the Tennessee baseball team. A duo have earned All-America honors. Sean Hundley and Jake Rucker have been recognized by Baseball American as All-Americans. So shout out to Jake Rucker and Sean Hundley, just adding to the award collection for Tennessee.
Congratulations to those guys. Well-deserved, Jake Rucker and Hundley. A couple of studs.
No doubt about it. Here we go, number three. The U.S. Open is still continuing on in its first day today. We still have a three-way tie at the top of the leaderboard, but the names have switched up a little bit. So currently three under par, tied for the lead. Again, at three under, you have Matthew Wolf, Brooks Koepka, and Rafa Cabrera-Bio. I hope I'm getting that right. He has he's jumped up a couple of spots here as all of them are three under through at least 12 holes. That's your so those three, yeah, those three are in the lead.
It's tight at the top of the leaderboard. I say anybody who's even par or under is in pretty good shape, even one over, maybe even two over. Mickelson's out there struggling, man. He's up to four over through 16. And you got to think he's digging himself a hole. He's going to have to pull out all the stops tomorrow to even make the cut, it would appear. But it's kind of a bummer, man. We've been looking forward to this ever since the PGA's. Hey, it's his home course. He's going to practice. He could go on a little run here. This is definitely a sad trombone moment for the Mickelson watchers out there today.
We talked about it at the beginning of the show today. He was two over, and you were saying, hey, if you can at least maybe switch back that two, get back to even. Yeah, unfortunately, he's gone two in the opposite direction.
Wrong, headed the wrong way, lefty. We'll see. He's got two more holes here to play. Maybe he can at least kind of hang around.
All right, here we go. Number four. We had a little bit of breaking news come out in the 4 o'clock hour out of nowhere after the owner of the team had already said that this head coach is safe. Rick Carlisle, who was the coach of the Dallas Mavericks, led the Mavericks to a NBA title back in 2011, has informed the team and owner Mark Cuban that he will not be returning as coach next season. This is amongst a lot of turmoil that's been going on in the last couple days.
Yeah.
But he is out. Which, look, I got to say, if you're a coach and you are leaving a top five generational player, that's got to really speak to some bad, bad, bad things happening within the organization.
What do you think it is? Do you think Luka wanted a coaching change? Has he orchestrated all this behind the scenes?
You know, I'd love to know what kind of hand he plays in it. I think it's just like, dude, we are not winning. We are not doing anything good. We're not making good acquisitions. We're not making good news stories. Nothing is good. Got to make change. So they have, and again, that was a little bit of breaking news there in the 4 o'clock
hour. Who you
gonna get? I don't know. They got to get a new GM and a coach. It's a double. It's like Tennessee football this past offseason. Not only had they get the athletic director, but then he's got to go get a coach too.
Let Cuban coach the team by himself, man. His skinny jeans and a t-shirt, his tight-fitting t-shirt.
That guy.
Coach the team himself.
That guy needs to go turn his career into an NFT, go try to sell it and get rid of the Mavericks.
Yeah, you're so smart and, you know, rich and
go enjoy Shark Tank.
The rest of us, yeah, go coach your basketball team there, smart guy.
Yeah. Dummy. All right, here we go. Last but not least, man, this is something really cool. If you have not gotten a chance to see this yet, head over to fanrunradio.com as former Tennessee player and former Atlanta Brave Greg McMichael jumped on with our station, our own Logan Quinn, talking a little bit about this Tennessee baseball team. You know, he's got some really interesting quotes. I'm not going to read them all, of course. I want you to go back and read the article that Logan did. But here's one quote I found interesting from Greg McMichael. He brings the energy, talking about Tony, just the energy level that it's taken to turn the ship around. It's not easy to take over a team that's kind of average for a long period of time. There's something special that's happened to him to turn it around. It looks like Tony V has the ability to do that because he has done so in such a short period of time. I don't see this as a fluke. I think it's just who he is. So high words of praise from a former Tennessee baseball player. Not that everybody hasn't been very full of high praise, but no doubt about it, that is the kind of thing that you like to see from a highly credible source.
In Tony, we trust. Seen the scenes already from out in Omaha. They're filming some of the player introductions and everything.
Those are awesome.
Tony's jumping around, chest bumping his players. They put the pink daddy hat on him. A smile that could melt a million hearts. Sir Anthony of House Vitello, best of luck to you this weekend. We're behind you, buddy.
I feel like the little girl in Game of Thrones who gave her support to Jon Snow. She stood up in front of all the old guys. What was her name? Little Bear, something like that.
Oh, Lady Mormont.
Yeah, that's who I feel like right now. Just look, I don't have a lot to do with this whole thing, but by God, these got my support. I ain't leaving.
Thank you, Rick. That is the top five at five, brought to you by Jets Pizza in Farragut. Folks, if you're looking for a great way to treat your family, you can bring them here and eat at Jets Farragut. Or you dads out there on your way home, you want to be the hero, call in your order, pick it up, take it home, have it delivered, whatever. You do it tonight. You could set it up for tomorrow night. That'd be a great, you know, Friday night, fun night. Pizza, bring home for the family from Jets. Support Fan Run. Get that chocolate chip brownie, some cinnamon sticks if you really want to do it up. You really want to go all out. They've got delicious salads and wings, turbo sticks, the cheesy bread. I love it all here at Jets Pizza, man. Show them some love. Tell them you heard about it right here on Fan Run Radio. They're next to the Shrimp Dock and National RX. out here on Kingston Pike and Farragut, and we'll be here for another hour or so. What do you say? We're having more pizza and beer afterwards? That's the plan?
I was going to say that's the plan for the 5 o'clock hour, but if we don't get this done right here on the show, then we're going to have to stay a little bit of extra time.
Extra time, man. It's a tough job. Somebody's got to do it. Is this true, what you sent me? Westchester. Bear, get a load of this.
Hit me.
According to Westchester, so consider the source. Little sketchy. He says three of the last four teams that have put LSU out of the postseason have won the College World Series. How does that strike you?
I mean, it's logical. Past three of the four World Series, I mean, LSU's been one of the better teams in the country. If you're good enough to take down the Tigers, then you're obviously pretty good. Can we get this fact checked by Rick?
Rick, will you fact check Westchester's nugget? I mean, if this is true, if it holds up to scrutiny, where'd you hear this? According to John Reed? Yeah, you better fact check it.
Partially redeem his horrendous performance this week on the
I'm just kidding, Reed. I'll take his word for it. The last three of the last four teams that have put LSU out of the postseason have won the College World Series. That's fantastic. It's a team of destiny.
Yep.
I'm telling you.
All right, I'm looking it up. This will be pretty cool, though.
Let's get T-Dog in here next. T-Dog, you're on the drive, Fan Run Radio.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Not much. How you doing?
All right, pretty good. Hey, man, I've been listening to you for probably about 7 or 8 years, but first time I ever called, so it's pretty exciting.
The excitement and the pleasure is all mine, T-Dog. Thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. It's good to finally talk to you.
Yeah, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to see what y'all think about the pitching situation this weekend. How are we going to play it? Wonder if we're going to start our ace first, or we're going to play it kind of like the way we did in the SEC tournament, where maybe start Heflin on Sunday, try to get a win versus
T-Dog,
Virginia, and save Dallas for Texas.
T-Dog, if it ain't broke, why fix it? That's been my stance on this since postseason started. It seems like we've been doing just fine. I say you start Cheese on Sunday. You got Blade Tidwell up for number two. And I guess Heflin or Sewell for game three. That's what I would do. Don't overthink it.
T-Dog, I've even heard that there's some speculation that you could see Heflin out of the bullpen at times this weekend, in addition to in a starting role. Keep in mind, like, he's pretty much all we got besides Redmond Walsh as far as left-handed pitching. And you find yourself in a bit of a jam, good left-handed batter coming up. I wouldn't be surprised to see Will Heflin trot out there to, even if it's just for a couple of batters, but it's all hands on deck. I do think Chad Dallas will get the ball Sunday night. But yeah, I mean, I think you'll see all of those guys because Tennessee plans on being there for a while.
Do you think Vitello's leash is going to be as long as it's been all year, Russ, with his starter? Or is he going to tighten down a little bit since it's absolutely go time now?
I don't see him changing. I don't see him changing, and he has been – he'll give his starters benefit of the doubt, particularly Chad Dallas. He tries to get by as long as he can with his starters. And at times, I know as fans we've been a little, come on, Tony, go get him. A little nervous about it, but you can't argue with the results, so – as you yourself just said, Bear, why change now?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know that you and Trey in the group text sometimes get a little nervous, maybe a little bit hot-headed about it.
Oh, I no, hot-headed? I go full-on Roane County rage. Tony, what are you doing? Go get him, man. Your boy's getting lit up like a Christmas tree. You're just going to let him stand out there all day and get shelled like this?
I go full red, man. I feel like when I'm calling during a football game.
Anything else, T-Dog?
T-Dog, drop the line.
Oh, T-Dog. Great to hear from you, buddy. Thanks for the phone call.
Great first 865- call,
546-8200. Your number to get on the G3 Help Me Hotline, 546-8200. If you want to jump in, Rick Butler has crunched the numbers and confirmed the John Reed Westchester stat of the day. Three of the last four teams to put LSU out of the postseason have ended up winning the College World Series, and they include, was that 2016? Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers won the national title that year after they beat LSU.
It's incredible.
Florida in 2017, Oregon State in 2018, and then Vanderbilt in 2019.
Right. So when LSU lost to the champion, they lost in the super regional round in 2016. Yes, to Coastal Carolina. In 2017, they made it all the way up to the College World Series. And then in 2018, when they lost to Oregon State, they only made it to the regional round. So a little bit of all over the place, I guess. And all three of those losses, all three of a different postseason stage.
How about that?
Fascinating. Very fascinating.
Let's make it 4 for 5, boys.
Yep, that's exactly right. 4 for 5.
Outstanding. I think if Tennessee is getting back to T-Dog's question about the pitching, I think those first games are so important. If you lose it, that puts your back up against a wall. I think that you go all in. And keep in mind, you're going to be playing – you've got a day off in between, so you're not playing 2 days in a row. You're going to play Sunday and Tuesday. And so you do want to save a little bit of something, but you're going to have that extra rest as well. So I think you could see some creative matchups with the pitching. I talked about Heflin coming out of the bullpen perhaps, and I think that you are going to see some things different, but I'm with you, Bear. I go with the cheese. I'm starting Chad Dallas Sunday if I'm Tony Vitello.
I just like it because, I mean, number one, he's our number one. And then I just like it because it's we give no quarter, because as soon as you get done facing Cheese Dallas, you got Blade Tidwell on night two. And I other than Vanderbilt, I think we've got one of the better 1-2 punches in all of college baseball.
I agree with that. I really do. I think that Tennessee, man, I don't – obviously, it's not a rocker-lighter combination off the top. But what it is a lot of what you need at this level from your starting pitcher, especially when you're talking about either starting off a series or rebounding after the series, whether you took a loss and you need a next win, or you got a win and you would love to bring in one more, just like we saw last weekend. Whether you're talking about Chad Dallas and his longevity, his ability to eat up innings – whether you're talking about Blade Tidwell, that dude was still throwing 96 miles per hour in the sixth inning on Sunday last week. I just think that Tennessee has a lot of things that they can bring to the table.
Well, the other thing it does is it absolutely protects your bullpen, which is if you had to find a little bit of a weakness, it would be our bullpen. We don't have anybody like a cop. Just somebody could come in and absolutely just bear down. And boom, 1-2-3, up and down, automatic. So it's just critical, and especially in these, you know, the once we've hit the postseason with the regional supers, the way they're all laid out.
I would definitely agree. There's nobody that Tennessee fans could consensusly agree on that this team could really, really use than a shutdown closer to Copps level. But the fact of the matter is, I think there's only one Copps. What Sean Hundley has been able to do, though, I think is about as close as to what anybody in the country has been able to get close to Copps. I mean, that guy has really been a stud this year, coming in, closing out games, and making sure that Tennessee doesn't really fall back into a bad position. But you're right. I would love a guy like that who you know you can just send into the game, and you know the game's over at that point.
Oh, sure. That, and I think something that we haven't talked about enough is how well Vitello and Coach, I believe it's Anderson, our pitching coach, have managed the arms during the postseason. We've got some guys who barely put any mileage, don't have a lot of pitches thrown in the postseason. I feel like we're pretty fresh going into the World Series.
Russell Henley, your leader, he's in the clubhouse with a 4 under par 67 at Torrey Pines today, round one of the U.S. Open. We've got one person tied at 3 under. Rafa Cabrera Bello is at 3 under. He's still out there through 13. Brooks Koepka is in the clubhouse with a nice 69.
Nice.
2 under. And a lot of guys still haven't even teed off, man. I love it when the majors are out there on the West Coast. Let's get Brad in here next. Brad, you're on the Drive Fan Run Radio.
Hey, guys. Appreciate it. Hey, Russell, I'll be kind of quick. Have you heard any injury concerns with Ferguson?
Well, I haven't heard anything inside information or anything like that, if that's what you're asking, other than what we saw on the TV. On Sunday, I guess, against LSU, he looked banged up, didn't he? It looked like a right shoulder was bothering him.
Yeah, looked like I believe Chris Burke said he had something going on with his shoulder. And man, I believe if Tennessee's going to win at all, they're going to need Ferguson to bring his bat with him to Omaha. And I was just wondering if you had any info on it.
Well, he made that play where he was out in the field and he dove to his right, kind of up the middle, a little fly ball, a little blooper, made a spectacular play. You know, he's left-handed, so you wear your glove on your right hand, and it looked like he landed awkwardly on the shoulder. Was that the play where he was bleeding and he started rubbing the blood on his pants, and Chris Burke was like, yeah, that's what you do. Rick, you were there, so you went. But later in the game, he came up to bat, and he swung hard and missed. And then he really grimaced and kind of held his shoulder. At one point lately, they showed him in the dugout talking to the – I love our trainer, that guy who looks like your high school chemistry teacher in the dugout. He's talking to that guy. And
guy.
I mean, I think he's a little bit banged up. Obviously, he played through it, but that's something that bears watching going forward for certain, Brad.
All right, that's all I got. Enjoy the show, guys.
Man, I'm just happy that
when Gilbert. Our trainer.
What's that, Bear?
I said I love our trainer. They call him Doc. They ought to call him Doc. The grizzled old baseball trainer.
I hope they call him Doc. I hope he is a doctor.
Yeah, me too. That would be nice. I'm glad Drew Gilbert's forearm is all right. So it seems he got plunked in that last game. He took a nasty one off the arm.
He wanted to punch that guy in the face.
And we talked about at the beginning of the week, that might be the one guy on the team who you have no doubt might.
What's the who goes yard first? Who hits the first home run of the week for the Balls?
Great question.
I have to go with Gilbert.
I'm between Evan Russell and Jordan Beck. Jordan Beck had a nasty weekend last weekend. I could totally see him keeping the heat going, being a power guy at the back of the lineup like he's been.
Yeah, given the size of the park, and it's not going to be as hitter-friendly as Lindsey, Beck may be the name to go with because, I mean, when he gets a hold of it, he gets a hold of it. He's lost.
It's true. It's a great point.
Stay with us. The Drive continues. 865-546-8200. Your number to get on the show, 546-8200. If you want to chime in, more of your phone calls coming up.
The Drive.
The Drive Fan Run Radio. See Mickelson's second shot here. 17th hole for Lefty. He's been struggling out there. The defending PGA champion trying to get back in it. Oh, now he's going to do that thing where he steps off. He's locked in and he's focused. Rick Butler, you can't rush these things.
Checking it out from every angle possible.
4 under on the round and on the last hole now for Lefty, the 51-year-old. 865-546-8200. Your number if you want to get on the show this afternoon. Talking Tennessee baseball, talking epic choke jobs.
Oh, my gosh, I forgot about that. That was the start of our show today. I still have so many thoughts on that I have written down from the beginning in the first hour. That was a great question you had.
You're taking notes on the opening segment of the show?
Well, I took notes in case we were going to come back to it.
That's impressive.
I had examples lined up.
That's impressive.
No, but that's such a good question because, like we had said, there's so many things that factor into it, right? You're obviously going to have one team potentially finalizing the comeback, or you have the other team who chokes. So I tweeted this out. I want to get your thoughts on. So I just chose four games. I think we might have touched on a couple of them. 2014 at South Carolina, would you call it a Tennessee comeback or a South Carolina choke?
Little of both.
I would call that one a comeback. But you know what I would call a South Carolina choke was the year before that. 2013 here. Remember that was Butch Jones's first season. Marquez North had the crazy catch. And you go back to that game, Spurrier, his use of timeouts. Remember he wasted his timeouts at the end of that game thinking that maybe he could trick us. It was some bizarre situation. We ended up getting the ball back. Long pass to North, and then was it Daniel Lincoln still at that time, or
was it Pilardi? Daniel Lincoln was long gone.
It was Pilardi.
Was that Marquez North's one-handed grab on the sideline?
Yeah.
That was incredible.
I thought that was more of a Carolina choke because that was a really good South Carolina team. They had Clowney and all those guys, and they really just kind of gave us that one.
So in the opposite direction.
No business losing to us that game. No business.
In the opposite direction, one game that I do not give to our opponent, one game that we lost, I call the 2019 a BYU one. I do not call that a BYU comeback. I think that Tennessee had it. Tennessee had every chance to close that game out. But that, to me, is an example of the kind of game that is a definitive choke. Well, they had multiple chances to close it out and did not.
Yeah, I got
let up the big play.
JG missed a wide open touchdown, as I recall, at one point. Jennings was loose in the end zone, and he just, 2 seconds late, man. It was just awful. Then, of course, the Alante Taylor bust was.
Yeah.
I've got one for you. I can't believe it hasn't come up, fellas. You ready?
Hit me.
2016 Florida.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so that one intrigues me. That's one of the ones I had notes on.
How far down were we?
Go ahead.
How far down were we?
I want to say it was.
We were down 24-3.
Yeah, 24-3.
And we put up 38 unanswered.
It's pretty good.
If I were a Florida fan in that moment, I would totally say that. If I'm a Florida fan, after getting 38 straight put on me, I'm basically saying that Tennessee dominated for an extended amount of time. That was a true Tennessee comeback. I don't consider a choke being an entire second half. That's just they played bad and Tennessee played better.
I can't think of any Florida play where I know they threw an interception to Todd Kelly at one point, but I can't think of any play where they had a chance to score or break a big play and somebody just botched it, or they had a chance to make an interception, some sort of game-changing play. They just kind of went to sleep. and Tennessee made all the big plays. The tease Tabor, he did kind of fall on his face on that play, which was
Also the exact same reasoning of why I have 1998 Arkansas as an Arkansas choke. Because I do believe on that one play, and granted, it's not a game that I saw live, only in replays and stories. But I do believe that that one play, I think that that puts it into the choking category.
Once Tabor fell, they
the 98 Arkansas.
Oh.
I might have not said that.
Yeah. Oh.
Like that's why I consider that one a choke. Yeah. Because, again, you got that one play that it revolves around.
I got a good one for you, boys. Basketball side of things.
Okay.
Tennessee at Auburn, 2020, when we blew the big lead up there, when it finally looked like Jordan Bowden had emerged from his shooting slump.
Ooh.
Oh.
Oh, that was definitely, we choked. Like a cat choking on a hairball. That was awful.
What about the other side of that? The 2018 team? Is that the team that won the SEC for Barnes? Grand Admiral team, 2018-2019?
Co with Auburn.
The last game of the regular season, we have to beat Georgia at home to win a share of the championship with Auburn, and we did not play well. We did not play well. Georgia had a big lead on us. We end up coming back and winning. Grant Williams fouled out of the game. Yonte Mayton fouled out too, I believe, the two big forces in that game, and we were able to come back. Admiral Schofield had a huge game. That was kind of a choke job.
66-61 Tennessee, I believe. March 3rd, 2018.
Yeah.
Would that sound about right?
The moment Admiral.
Yeah, hold on. I got one top that. The Tennessee Kentucky basketball game a couple of years ago where they had the big lead. What year was that? And we came storming back and ended up just housing them. I think it was up there at Rupp.
Yeah.
That is also the year we won the share of the regular season title, correct, Bear?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a title on the line there, but yeah, we scored the last, I want to say, 14 points of the game. Fulkerson had a couple of big shots. Lamonte Turner buried a big – or no.
It was the year that Schofield ended the game with the dunk.
Yeah. I don't know.
Smoked a couple people.
What does it say? Guys, what does it say about Tennessee basketball, the state of Tennessee basketball, that we have multiple wins at Rupp Arena to the point where we can't distinguish between them anymore?
It's pretty great. It's pretty great.
Hashtag feels good.
Really good. Yeah.
Oh, it's spectacular. 865-546-8200. If you've got thoughts on that, the hot question. When is it a choke? When is it just an epic comeback?
You know, I hate this game so much. But Tennessee was up 14-0 on Georgia last year, and I still don't think there's anything Tennessee could have done to win that game. I don't know if I consider that a 14-0, we were up in no time at all, and I don't even know if we looked at it as an advantage. I don't think there was anything we could have done not to choke away that 14. I think that they were just a considerably better team, way better coach than us in the moment. That one to me is a wash, even though for the fan in the moment it felt like, dang, man, 14-0.
We had the fumble recovery in the end zone on the first play to score. And then we went for the short fourth down, and Garantano hit Palmer on the bomb for a touchdown. It was 14-0 at that point.
Yes. And then we scored once more.
But they had scored it. They finally scored, and then we had the goal line stand with Toa Toa right at the end. Was it 14-7 at the half?
So, excuse me, you are right. We were up 7-0 with under a minute in the game, and then they came back and they had a touchdown run with about 6 minutes left in the first quarter. So Tennessee really never had a lead above 7-0.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But I mean,
guess I remember that wrong. Jumped, though.
Your overall point, though, is correct in that we played well the first half, and it just didn't feel like it was ever going to hold up. Now, we choked in even more spectacular fashion than you could have imagined. in the second half, JG went full JG. But, yeah.
We were leading 21-17 at half. That was unreal.
It was probably the best football of the Jeremy Pruitt era, the first half that they played down there at Georgia. That was probably the high water mark, and it was nowhere near good enough.
JG had two. He had a 27-yard touchdown pass to Josh Palmer and a 36-yard touchdown pass to Palmer, both within the second quarter. That guy is so good. He was out there destroying Georgia's top corners. If only he had a real quarterback.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I will always say that Butch Jones, despite what you say about him, is a better coach than Pruitt. I know this is a rather pathetic Tennessee football argument to have, but you say what you want about Butch. His high watermarks, beating Florida, beating Georgia twice, taking Alabama to the wire in Tuscaloosa, so much better than Pruitt's high marks of almost being okay against Georgia,
Indiana.
Yeah, and he did almost have kind of a comeback going on with Alabama on the road in 2019, but even that was, it's like, okay, if we score, it's only a 7-point game, and then maybe, I don't know. We were playing their backup quarterback, and JG was always going to go full JG. You just knew it.
Heartbreak Hotel.
You just knew it. It was always going to happen. Oh, man. What a day. Ladies and gentlemen, what a day out here to be at Jet's Pizza in Farragut. Breaking things down to levels beyond scientific. The cold beer is, it's calling to us, Rick. Hey, Russell, Rick, come drink us. Come drink us. Come rescue us. We're right over here waiting for you. Oh, man.
I keep losing Russell during the commercial breaks, and then I got to go look over at the bar and see if he's starting the drinks early.
No,
then I'm going to join.
No. We're keeping it professional here, this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Just like you can keep it professional over at FanDuel Sportsbook. You know, the Euros still going on. It's always exciting when you see players score. Bear, your boy Kevin De Bruyne put one in for Belgium earlier today. It was an emotional scene in Copenhagen as the Belgian team beat Denmark their first game after that scary scene with Christian Eriksen collapsing over the weekend. You can make it even more exciting over at FanDuel as they're paying out double the winnings when you bet on a player to score during a Euro 2020 game over at FanDuel. Just enter our promo code DRIVE1 when you sign up. Pick your goal scorer for a shot at 2x the payout as you can make your bets right now for the Euros. Oh, man. The Netherlands, the Dutch with a big 2-0 win over Austria today. The Orange Machine making it happen. Who do you have scoring first tomorrow at the Euros? Go to FanDuel, make your picks, double your payout up to $250, and you'll have your bonus in no less than 72 hours. There's no better place to bet Euro 2020 than FanDuel Sportsbook, America's number one sportsbook with the best betting lines, the best promotions, the fastest payouts, and the safest, most secure website and app to use. Sign up for FanDuel Sportsbook with promo code DRIVE1 and choose any player in the anytime goal scorer market for a chance to double your winnings. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wager in designated offer market. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max bonus $250. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. We got to take a quick timeout. We'll be back to wrap things up. It's The Drive, live this afternoon at Jet's Pizza in Farragut. Stay with us.
The Drive.
wrapping up Thursday afternoon edition of the show. Thank you, Jeff Pizza, for having us out here this afternoon. Thank you, everybody who came out to see us. Good turnout today. A beautiful Thursday afternoon. We'll be back in studio tomorrow for round two of the Open Euros, NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, and, of course, your Tennessee Volunteers headed to Omaha. It'll be our final chance to speak on it before the games start up on Sunday. And, yeah, it'll be a College World Series time in Omaha. 865-546-8200. If you want to chime in this afternoon, you got thoughts on anything, you have win totals out from Caesars Sportsbook in Las Vegas for every D1 college football team, both Clemson and Alabama, with the highest over-under win totals at 11.5. What do you think the – I know you struggle with this, Bear, but how many games do you think Vegas thinks Tennessee wins this year?
Vegas? The over-under, I imagine, is probably, 5.5?
Wow. This is close. It's 6, according to this
book.
Yeah,
I figured it'd be around there.
I think it's low, man. I think it's low. I think we're winning 7 or 8 games this year.
I think Vegas is looking at the fact that we lost 20-something players into the transfer portal, including all of our best players.
Yeah.
Now, Heupel has done a good job of – I mean, he's had to. If he wants to have any chance this fall, he's been extremely active in the portal himself. So hopefully he's, as you alluded to earlier with Mark Nagy or mentioned, hopefully he's chosen wisely in the portal.
My biggest hope about the way this football season unfolds is not really have to do with the win total as much as it is. I just want to win that Pitt game. The word picture we painted earlier in the week, just imagine it. You beat Pitt. You lose to Florida, but you come back and you beat Missouri on the road and South Carolina at home. This is not out of the realm of possibility. It's very likely we'll be an underdog at Missouri, but it's not impossible to beat them. I don't think anybody would say that.
So
you're 5-1 with Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss coming to town. That'll be a huge game. And for me, Bear, it's not so much like how many games do you win. It's just I can't stand it. It tears me up to see this community and this fan base apathetic. And what I don't want to happen is you lose to Pitt, you lose to Florida, you lose to Missouri, and you're 3-3 with a couple of, you know, meaningless wins, and people are just like, yeah, whatever. And they've tuned out. And there's no enthusiasm. There's no passion. I know
right.
That if we go 5-1 those first 6 games, it's kind of fool's gold. We're not back. It doesn't necessarily mean any. We're going to Atlanta or anything like that. But by God, I just want to see this fan base engaged and passionate through the month of October, as opposed to just waving the flag and waiting for basketball.
Yeah, so, I just do something exciting for us, you know.
You know, Russell, you said that you aren't really looking at win-loss total, and obviously you won't be able to be looking at bowl success because that is likely not going to be an option. So is there, or I guess I should say, do you have kind of a tangible goal for the end of the year that you will be looking at, or at least maybe something that you can project to evaluate at the end of the year? Again, maybe not win totals, maybe not bowl game, but is there anything that you can at least point to, or is it just a feeling?
Two things. First off, as it pertains to the football team, do you have a quarterback? Will Harrison Bailey or Joe Milton, most likely, will one of those guys establish themselves as the guy? And will you be able to go out there and put up 500 yards of offense against the teams you should put 500 yards of offense up against? Vanderbilt, South Alabama, I would even throw Kentucky in that mix. Can you play the kind of football Josh Heupel says he wants to play? Can you do that against the teams you should be able to do that in year one? That's number one. Number two is probably more important, and that's the investigation and the NCAA stuff. If not settled, on the path to being settled, I feel much better about all this. I just want to know where it stands. Is it a 2-year probation, 1-year bowl ban? How long? That's all I really want to know. And if that can be defined, then I think myself and a lot of other Tennessee fans are going to have a lot more confidence exiting the season.
I'm totally with you there. I think that's absolutely the things that really I think reasonably that Tennessee fans can be looking forward to in just terms of success, because we're not going to be getting it in maybe traditional ways that we would have looked at in other years.
Look, it'd be great to say, oh, man, win 8 or 9 games. 8-4, 9-3, I'll be happy. But really, it's about establishing a brand, an identity, whatever you want to call it. This is the way we're going to play, and this is kind of what we're striving towards. And it sounds like they want to win shootouts, whatever. We're not going to play a lot of defense. It doesn't sound like it's okay. Can we win that way long term? I don't know, but you need to beat the team that you're better than anyway right off the bat. If Pitt comes in here and drills us, it's going to be a bit of a red flag. I'm not going to call for Apple's head or anything like that, but that's not a great team that's coming in here. If we stub our toe against South Carolina, that's not a good team. Vanderbilt, whoever, that's going to be frustrating. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. Let's grab a call, a quick call. Willie is next. Good afternoon, Willie. You're on the drive, Fan Run Radio.
Hey, Russell, do you care if I switch it up to baseball real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I don't want to derail y'all's show. So, being in West Memphis as an Arkansas fan and knowing the program that Tony Vitello has strung together as of late, he's done a great job. But I'm going to be honest, man, I think the Cinderella story is coming to an end at 12 o'clock this weekend. I think that Tennessee is going 0-2 in barbecue. You're seeing Tony's true colors this weekend. He can't hold Dave's jockstrap. I'm going to go on hold and listen because I want to hear what you have to say about Tony not being able to hold DVH's jockstrap. Thank you.
Well,
Tony probably took DVH's jockstrap and pulled it up way past his head when he gave him a wedgie here in Knoxville. He's going to – where are your boys? Where is DVH as you go? What is he, a professional wrestler or something? Really in West Memphis. Hey, I'll tell you what, though. I'll tell you what. We will go and send DVH, as you're calling him, a postcard from Omaha, because he ain't going. And Tony Vitello is. So you tell me who's showing their true colors. Your guy. DVH is showing his true colors because he is a loser. You had the best pitcher maybe in the past 10 years in college baseball. You left him in there for 116 pitches. He's probably going to have Tommy John surgery now. You might have ruined his career. That's the kind of way they take care of their players down there. He gives up a 500-foot bomb. He's a loser too. Your coach is a loser. Your pitcher's a loser. Your fans are losers. Calling the Hogs is the worst tradition in the history of college sports, and you're a loser, Willie. So I'm glad you're hanging on. I hope you heard all of that, and I hope you have a pleasant evening. Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Bear. Thank you, Adam Hickman and River Bailey, for all their hard work in the studios this afternoon. And thanks most of all to Angie and the gang here at Jet's Pizza.
Yep.
It's been a fantastic time, and now it is
It's Miller time. It's time to step up to the bar, Rick. We've earned this one.
This is our moment.
Thank you, everyone. Overtime is coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio. Back in studio tomorrow as we do it again, The Drive, here on Fox Sports Knoxville.
The Drive.
Drive.